Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Marchand, who has 13 overtime winners in his career. Marchand, high slot to Bergeron. Far point now, Marchand. High slot. Feeds it down low. They score! His 14th career overtime winner, and the Boston Bruins win it 2-1 over the Colorado Avalanche.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. That, the call of Judd Surratt, old producer of Mac and Terry on the Heavy Fuel crew. Hawks trying to make it 8 in a row tonight. They're in Boston. Judd will join us in about 5 minutes or so. Good call right there from Judd Surratt. I have not heard much of his play-by-play work.
Oh, man. I'm telling you something. He was the first voice of the Chicago Wolves. And, God, did I hate losing him as our executive producer on that show.
Really?
But I was so glad for him, you know.
How long did you guys work together?
2 years, I think. Yeah. You'll like this. Little behind-the-scenes radio, if you don't mind.
Oh, I love it.
I wanted him so bad to be my executive producer. I threw people off the scent by throwing nothing but bouquets in the direction of several other candidates. So they would say, okay, I got to have him. So I got the redheaded stepchild.
Mm.
I kept him in the weeds.
Little misdirection.
Yeah.
Did Judd know what you were doing?
Little razzle dazzle. He wanted to work with Terry and me.
Oh, so I didn't know. Yeah. So he was in on it, singing the praises of other people.
Yeah, and I was sincere in my praise of other people, sort of.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll do that. Okay.
Sort of.
Sure.
I fought hard for Judd Surratt, and I fought hard for Jesse Rogers.
Yeah?
Yeah. Those were good moves.
Good judgment.
Bad I see what
judgment.
You did there. That's very, very clever.
You know, I can do that.
Yeah, you're good.
But, all right. So you guys worked together for 2 years, and then he was studio host, right, of the Hawks on GM
yes.
for a long time.
Before that, he did the NHL Network. I can't remember what channel it was on in the early days of high-definition television. Remember when there were maybe 14 channels that had a high-def feed and you'd watch insects eating each other?
Yeah.
Just because the visuals were so intoxic. Oh, my God, look at these landscapes, you know, scenescapes. It was a channel of scenescapes because they were so intoxicating visually.
Yeah, before I had a 1080p TV, I'd go to Best Buy and just look at the screens and be like, wow.
Yeah. Oh, man, look at that praying mantis.
It's a great place to be stoned.
You jump.
I'm still holding out for HD. I got all my red discs at home.
Really?
Blu-ray's not going to last, okay?
Of course.
But there were only a handful of channels in high def, and he was on the NHL Network. He did that, and then he came home to do the Blackhawks pre, intermission, and post. And did a lot of Cubs stuff as well. He was what Zach has been doing the last year with the Cubs, and then got an opportunity to be the voice of the Boston Bruins. So he took it. He packed up his stuff and went to the Bean, went to the 617. Off he goes.
Got a hell of a team, too.
Yes, they're very, very good.
How much of what you think you've seen from the Hawks, because you've certainly watched it more closely than I have, how much of it do you think has been they've been beating up on bad teams?
A lot. And giving up a lot of shots against some of those bad teams. I think 5 of the 7 wins, they've got 7 in a row going into tonight's date at the Garden, and 5 of them they've given up 40 shots or more. Cam Ward made 43 saves this past Sunday in the win over the Red Wings, and didn't get tested a lot in the first period, but man, they just got blitzed in the second and third periods, and Ward was up to the task. I don't know if he'll be able to do it for the long haul, but it looks good right now.
Well, after all that high praise, I'm sorry he didn't hear it live.
I saved some.
Oh, good. I hope so. The former producer of the Heavy Fuel crew and the play-by-play voice on the Sports Hub in Boston of the Bruins, Judd Surratt, is our guest. How's it going, Judd? Thanks for the time.
I'm good. Before we get started, I'm just curious. Danny, do you like Blackhawks blue or Bruins blue better?
Oh, that's a great question for me. I like Blackhawks blue better. Like the blue in the feather, you know, one of the three feathers that has only two colors in it. It's a really bright hue of blue, though, too. Yeah, you have the radio.com app, and you listening to us lately. Every now and again, I get, you're killing me, Smalls. What are you saying about moving Duncan Keith to forward? And let's not
talk. Am I going to have to get you a color wheel?
Yeah. that might be helpful, yeah. That cap is black knot.
The Yankees is a black and
the
white team.
The pinstripes are black knot.
Judd, I can't believe how many people on the text line were like, no, that's the color of the Yankees, that the White Sox and the Yankees have the same colors.
It's the darkest navy of all time. It really is.
It's midnight navy.
Yeah, midnight navy.
The hat is blue.
Yeah. Judd, let's forget Duncan Keith, all right? Because the Blackhawks need him on the blue line. They have some young guys who have a long way to go. But take the concept of an aging defenseman.
Are you really going there?
I've gone there because I've talked with people.
How about we move Chris Zorich to linebacker?
Yeah, that's what he said. That's what your text said. There were reasons to do that, too. But we don't have to get into that. That's 95. Wait, hockey people who played the game professionally say, your idea is founded in logic that it would make sense for a guy who has offensive chops and can play with an edge. It's true he doesn't possess – he's never going to be a sniper, but he's got a willingness –
You're going to die on the till, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. He'd have a willingness to engage in the corners. He's got a great stick. I think if you don't agree with that, then we should discontinue the conversation altogether. He wouldn't have to play 200 feet, which is difficult for a guy at the age of 35. If you are that skilled of a defenseman, you could prolong your career by going to the wing.
All right. I guess in theory it is possible, but in the reality of today's National Hockey League, I don't think it's going to work.
Okay, let's forget it then.
And the way that you want Duncan Keith to be successful, first of all, you're going to play him on one of your top two lines. You're going to play him on one of your bottom two lines. What kind of a center are you going to play him with? Is he going to be in a role where he has to check? Are you going to ask him to produce up front? And then how does that impact some of his matchup shifts? I think you've got a whole array of issues that you have to look at. What Duncan Keith is he is an elite transition defenseman who, as you and I had texted back and forth, he has a phenomenal stick, reads the game well, and he can log some big minutes and big times, and was an enormous part of three championships.
Judd Surratt, the veteran voice of the Bruins. I can say that now. He is the veteran. He's been at it for some time. Whether the Blackhawks, and we'll get to your bees and their blue colors, whether the Blackhawks can get off the canvas long enough to get that eight doesn't matter. What they've done is made themselves a better team for next season. They won the trade with the Coyotes. Stan Bowman, a job well done when everybody thought this thing was just going in the trash can. They're going to be a better team next year, and they make the long-term commitment to Colin Delia yesterday. What do you think?
Well, I think if the other changes that you haven't referenced is what they've done on the back end. You know, you bring in a guy like Carl Dahlstrom. You've sort of reshuffled some of the pieces on the back end. Connor Murphy has had more of a chance to come back from the back surgery. And I was looking at this earlier today. All right, so the Blackhawks right now heading into today's action are 30th out of the 31 teams in goals against. When they won championships in 2010, 2013, and in 2015, they were in the top five or better in all of those three. And I think that sometimes that gets lost. What made this team so good is how they were able to defend, what they were able to do to keep the puck out of their own zone, and what they did away from the puck. That was the fuel for three championships as much as having a lot of talent up front in a four-line rotation.
Okay, the Bruins, on the other hand, are among the league leaders in fewest goals against. I take it the Joni Cunningham-looking Tuukka Rask is back to form that got them to the final in 13.
Well, the issue for the Bruins this year is not the way they defend. But it's their ability to score 5-on-5. It's been an elite power play all season long. In fact, on home ice, it's at 30% or better. And that'll be one of the matchups that we're going to have to watch here tonight. Now, one of the issues for the Bruins here going forward in the next couple of weeks, they're going to be missing their leading goal scorer and leading scorer overall And David Pastrnak, who injured his thumb, he'll be out at least 2 weeks, maybe more. But that's been a challenge all season long for the Bees, is their ability to try and find five-on-five offense. They've basically got a dynamic top line, and David Krejci anchors the second line, but they haven't gotten enough from the other pieces beyond the top line and five-on-five. And that's what the general manager, Don Sweeney, is looking for, to see if he can bolster either a third line or somebody to play the right side on the second line with David Krejci.
Judd, for Blackhawks fans who may not have taken a peek at the Bruins, maybe didn't see them last year, they were punched out because the team wasn't a playoff team, have just come back on board recently with this seven-game winning streak. How radically different is this Bruins roster from the one the Hawks faced in 2013? I would guess only a few faces remaining.
I haven't looked back, but, it's pretty dramatically different, especially up front. You don't have Milan Lucic. You don't have some of those factors that are there on the back end as well. Zdeno Chara is still a fixture here. Patrice Bergeron is still here. Brad Marchand is still here. But I think for the most part, the roster has changed. The Bruins still like their core players. It's the ability to add. And for some of those guys, and listen, you know, it's somewhat the same case in Chicago with Kane and Taves, who are a little bit younger. They're 30, and Bergeron, Marchand, they're a little bit older. But I think that when Bruins fans look at this team and they realize, you know, hey, the window is here now. Let's see if we can strike while these players are still in their prime and playing at a high level in order to try and win a Stanley Cup.
We're talking to Score original Judd Surratt, also the voice of the Bruins. Hawks in Boston tonight, taking on the Bruins. So, Judd, give me some producing for Danny Mac, Score original days. Give me some stories.
You mean from the Wild West?
It was the Wild West, yeah. Judd and Jesse throwing haymakers almost literally from time to time.
This is what I want, Judd.
Yeah.
Oh, calling Danny on the golf course. What do we got on the show? You know, and I start to reel it off, and then toward the end of the call, because we're at like noon. Do you want to hear how I'm doing on the course? It's like, no. I've been here like, you know, slugging it out since like 9 a.m. Do I want to hear how you're doing on the course? No, I don't. Let me ask you, Danny Parkins, he brought in like a cooler full of fish while you're doing the show?
He brings in...
That
right,
always smells good.
Yeah, right now he's on a 10-year aged cheddar kick, but he's appalled that he can't find the 15, the 20, or the 30-year aged cheddar. But him and Burnsy do exchange fishes sometimes when he gets back from cottage.
Is he sending any, any of the interns? You know, and it took a while for the Score to get interns, because the original intern, I think, like the first day that intern was there, Mike North sent him to go wash his car. And Ron Gleason had to tell him, you know, that intern works for the entire station. But I think later when Danny took the intern and, you know, go get me some Chunky Monkey, will you?
I always bought for the intern. I would never ask one to wash my car or pick up my dry cleaning. Yeah,
monkey.
Yeah. But
yeah,
if
I... ice cream for us, I don't remember that.
Oh, come
wow.
on. We had Haagen-Dazs Brian. I had a Haagen-Dazs guy dropping stuff off on Belmont Avenue on a quarterly basis. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Danny, there are a ton of stories, and I had a blast working for the guy. There's nobody that I would rather go into the foxhole with than Dan and Terry back in the day.
Do you miss, because executive producing is different now. You know how buttoned up these teams are and PR staffs and all of that. You know, we're not staking out hotel rooms and dialing up blind landlines and that sort of thing. What was your best, like, innovative way to get a guest on the air?
Oh, man, innovation? I don't know if there was any innovation. You know, it was just hard work, trying to land guys. You had to stay at the old, whatever they're calling it now, the old Comiskey Park, in order to try and land Albert Bell while somebody's vacuuming the visiting clubhouse and waiting for the last Cleveland Indian to head out of the visiting clubhouse there on the south side. So are you sure that the business has changed or have the producers changed?
I think it's a combination of both, to be honest.
Didn't Albert Bell lift his leg and fart in your facial direction?
Yes, he did.
I thought so. Pleasant man,
yes,
Albert
did.
Bell. But boy, could he rake.
Yeah.
My favorite Judd booking story goes like this, and I'll try to be concise. We had been desirous of a conversation with Dave Dravecki, the big league pitcher who had lost his arm. And he had written a book. It was an inspirational book on how to, you know, continue your life when your dreams have been taken away and, coping with this handicap. And Brian Hanley and I one day, we said, you know what? We got a good vibe going here. We're not feeling it right now. Tell the publicist to call tomorrow. He calls tomorrow, and Brian and I are feeling the same way tomorrow. Terry and I are in the third day because I was polygamous. We were alternating all the time. And Terry didn't want to do it. And Judd is furious. What am I supposed to tell this guy? And I said, here's the deal. George Hoffman is not going to be back in the update studio for another 15 minutes. Why don't you go in there and interview him? And Judd says, what the hell do you want me to ask him? And Terry says, ask him how he hails a cab when he's holding a briefcase. That's so Bors.
All right, Parkins. So you know that one of his favorite movies is The Pope of Greenwich Village?
Yes, I watched it on assignment.
I had two forays. I got Mickey Rourke on the phone twice. The first time I had him on, he was ready to go. McNeil, can we push him for like 15 minutes? Danelle Wolford's having a contract dispute.
No.
Oh, yeah. So I get on with Mickey Rourke. I'm like, hey, Mickey, can we push you for about 15 minutes? Yeah, that'd be okay. Yeah, that's fine. It took me a friggin' year to get him back on the phone.
Oh,
you should have.
Almost blew him off again.
As you know what?
He blew him off again.
No, I did.
Almost. Oh. I told him, you're taking him.
It was one of the best interviews we did. He dropped F-bombs twice in 30 seconds.
Twice?
The system did not recycle.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the second one got on the air.
I had Dan Lee, Seth Mason, Ron Gleason, Harvey Wells. They're all standing in there. Don't you know he's swearing on the air? I'm like, yes, and I'm not dumping him. It took me a year to get him back on the phone.
Eric Roberts, too. Eric Roberts was so high, Judd convinced him we were recording because he didn't want to do it live. He didn't trust himself. So Judd tells him we're just recording this. If there's anything uncomfortable, you could say stop the interview. And we punch him in, and he's immediately Eric Roberts. Dan and Terry, you guys got a great show. It was hysterical. One of my favorites.
I love the ego of you bumping Mickey Rourke.
There was a sports story that apparently I have no memory of that, but I'll take your word for it. You have a pretty good memory for that sort of thing. And Judd, the day Grant Mulvey, the only Blackhawk who ever scored five in a contest, called and said, this Judd Surratt sniffing around about my Wolves PR/play-by-play job. Should I hire him? And I said very quickly, before somebody else does. And I am delighted that you have, advanced to the station you're at now in life with the Bruins. What do the Bruins mean to the people in Boston, a city that is so used to winning championships? How far off the radar are the Bees?
Oh, I don't think that they're far off the radar. I think, you know, they're very comparable to the Blackhawks, and they mean the same amount. And obviously, you've got a different set of legends here in Chicago. It's Savard, Esposito, Hull. Here, you see Bork or Middleton or Bobby Orr at the game. So they are deeply embedded here in the culture. You know, and obviously you got a lot of hockey that's played not only at this level, but at the college level with Northeastern, Boston University, Boston College, Harvard, Yale, all the Ivy League teams and everybody in Hockey East. So this is as rich as it gets as far as a hockey market in North America.
Sorry. Have a good broadcast tonight, and I'm sorry you had to reschedule Mickey Rourke, man.
All these years later.
Love talking to you guys. All the best.
Thank you for the time, Judd. Always enjoy it.
Thanks, Judd.
See you, boys.
Judd Surratt, voice of the Bruins. Damn it, Dan! He would yell at me. We'd yell at each other at the top of our lungs and just drop it 30 seconds later.
That's how it should be.
It should be. Right.
Should be.
It ought to be one.
That's right. Hub Arkish at 5:00. It's the best team they've played in this stretch by far. They're fourth in the Eastern Conference. Montreal and Washington just a point back of the Bruins.
Yeah, as Jason Goff would say, they've been bum slaying. They have been. I have not denied that for a second. But when you're working your way up from the bottom, you take every win and you take every 2 points you get and you say, damn, that's two more. So hopefully they can at least get one out of this thing tonight.
So we got Hub Arkish coming up at 5:00. We'll get his thoughts on Kareem Hunt. A huge development also in the Kyler Murray story that we haven't touched on yet. It's Mack and Parkins on the Score.
I think the Bulls are in perfect position to really make a leap next year. Hopefully, keep our fingers crossed, we get Zion Williamson, the number one pick in the draft. If not, you know, you go out and you get a Ja Morant. Hopefully, we get one or two of those players. And then we're talking about a team that's ready to really turn around.
Kendall Gill with Mully and Haw. Bottom of the hour on the score, brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this Wednesday when they host Rutgers at 6. Purchase tickets now at nusports.com. And that right there is the dilemma. The Bulls have positioned themselves in this rebuild where the big basketball moves have been pretty good, and Otto Porter seems like a fit. And they weren't supposed to be this bad.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Like, they weren't supposed to be this bad until they find themselves with a shot at a top three pick. But that's by accident.
Yeah, right. Right.
So I struggle how much credit I'm supposed to give them when they were supposed to be competing for the playoffs this year. And last year, Pack said he never wanted to have another season like last year again.
And there it is. I want to be 100% next to you on the Bulls. The moves they've made in recent months have been the right ones. And many of them have. But what keeps me from going as far as you just did was their decision to continue with Jim Boylan.
Well, see, and I'm separating.
That's a huge decision.
I agree it is, but they haven't given him a contract extension yet. So if they're just firing Fred Hoiberg, like I'm treating Jim Boylan like he's an interim coach. And so to me, they're a bad team with an interim coach who unfortunately has made them into an embarrassment in the league. More of an embarrassment in the league. And so that's a problem, because this season, if they were going to be bad, it shouldn't be embarrassingly bad where they're the punchline.
So you're holding on to hope they reboot after the season.
Absolutely.
It didn't sound that like that was their mindset when they talked to the world, or at least the part of the world that's listening, last week.
No, it didn't. How could it possibly be the plan?
It's the Bulls.
Okay. But
the best answer I can offer you.
You're right, but if Jim Boylan looked great, they could come out and say we gave him a 4-year contract extension. They haven't done that. They've given him a perfunctory raise because he moved from head assistant to head coach, and they said that paying three coaches is not going to be an issue if Fred doesn't take another job. We'll believe that when we see it. They've certainly sold off enough assets to accumulate some money for it. But I just. NBA head coach is not that big of a difference-making position, especially when you're bad.
Unless he is turning potential free agents off, then it's a huge position.
Agreed completely. But they've also already acknowledged that they're not going after big-time free agents this offseason. That's what the Otto Porter...
Cross difference makers off, then.
That's the thing. That was what the Otto Porter trade was. They're like,
But don't you use next season with a fresh approach and try and resurrect some respectability and credibility among the rank and file who are going to be free agents?
Yes, I would think. And I also think that you want to find your guy who's going to be here so that Lowry and Zach LaVine and... Wendell Carter, don't keep changing coaches. It's not as impactful as it is for like a quarterback to go through four different offensive coordinators in 5 years. It's not that impactful.
Right.
But it still matters. But a big part of it also is, how attractive is your job? Like, if the Bulls get the 6th pick in the draft, then it's not as egregious to me if they bring back Jim Boylan, because the job isn't as good. If they get Zion Williamson...
What is that doing for the development of the young players, though? You going to play low post isolation next year without a Porter? Is that what you want?
No, obviously it's not what I want. I would get rid of everybody.
That's what he does, though.
And I know.
That's why another year of it is a year... we've already had too much.
I obviously agree with that. I'm the guy who, that's why I asked the questions about reputation that upset people so much, because it wasn't just about... this trade, this rebuild, this thing, it's great. You maybe are on the path back to the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoffs. But if no huge fish wants to come here, none of it matters. How do we address that systemic problem? And so...
perceptions take a long time to change. Why waste a season?
The only reason is, if they don't get Zion Williamson... and they don't have a guy who's like, oh my God, the opportunity to coach Zion Williamson is this unbelievable opportunity. Like, we've seen that in places before. Like, New Orleans' job got better when they had Anthony Davis. Like, you know, obviously the Cavs, they had just hired David Blatt from Israel. And then they got LeBron back, and they're like, nope. LeBron, who do you want to be the head coach? We'll pay this guy to go away. But you know what I mean? Like, Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson won 50-something games with the Warriors. They're like, we don't know that he can take us over the hill. We're going and getting Steve Kerr. That job was really attractive. He turned down the Knicks and $10 million a year to go coach Steph Curry, you know, in Golden State. So your job has to be attractive to get great coaches. And who in the hell would want to come coach this team as currently constructed with these bosses when you've got –
team with Zion Williamson on it.
That's what I'm saying, though. Yeah. If they get Zion Williamson, change the coach. If they get the sixth pick in the draft, you maybe should keep the coach so you don't keep changing the voices, and then you hire the good coach when you're ready to be good.
But if the voice that you're keeping is spewing nonsense and not practicing 21st century NBA offense, what's the point of it?
I don't know, Mac.
Don't look now, but you're making a case for them to bring him back. I'm sure that'll please Pax.
Well, that's the thing. You know why? The problems are so much bigger than Jim Boylan.
But it's among the problems.
It is among the problems, right? And so sometimes people are like, I'll just solve the easiest problem. But go to the root cause. I had people with feedback to our interview with Pax that said I was too hard on Pax and we should really be talking to Michael Reinsdorf. I'm like, listen, I can't go up any higher than the president of the damn team. Like, you're right. I could get the owner, but like, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But
let's see if we can get Michael on. See if we can get more out of Michael. I'd be all for it.
As would I. But it's the type of thing where this isn't an endorsement of Jim Boylan. It's an acknowledgement of, man, you've got Steve Kerr. Probably the second most respected coach in the game, right? Right now it's Pop 1, Kerr 2.
Probably.
Maybe Brad Stevens 2, but he's right there saying the Bulls did not give Fred Hoiberg a fair chance to succeed. On the record. You've got Stan Van Gundy and Jeff Van Gundy on the record talking about how terrible and toxic the Bulls organization is for coaches. You've got Tom Thibodeau, now without a job, smiling on ESPN, what do you think he's saying to coaches around the league? When Jimmy Butler gets together at the Team USA camp this summer,
I know.
What do you think he's saying?
I know.
So I have no, like, whoever the best coach that's going to change jobs this offseason is, I have no reason to believe that he would choose the Bulls unless they have Zion Williamson.
Okay. So you accept your fate then and take your pill and swallow it and expect another year of low post ISOs.
Maybe.
And practices or proposed practices after back-to-back games.
Thankfully, that's only happened the once.
That's a lie. We never called the union.
So I don't.
Never filed a grievance. No, but they discussed it. It was news. They had a conversation. They considered it.
And for all we know, they did call the union. Right. The union just didn't contact the league.
To suggest that it was a mutiny or a near mutiny is accurate.
Correct.
They were having a conversation about not practicing.
Correct. But I still am holding out hope that Jim Boylan won't be back. I am just concerned that the quality of the coach they can attract, absent a generational talent coming to them by way of luck and ping pong balls, is going to be that great. So maybe that's a cynicism, glass half empty feeling, but welcome to life as a Bulls fan in 2019. I don't expect some great coach to be like, you know what? I want to work for Gar Forman. I just don't expect it.
Yeah,
I
understand your point. I just think any day where you spend, wasting time, you're retarding their development if you don't get somebody, whether he's not the long, it's fine. If he's not the long term either, fine. Get somebody who throws out some of those things that turn people off and turn off potential free agents. Not for this year, for next.
Look at the team they played last night, the Bucks. It's a great example. Mike Budenholzer had never really coached the super elite talent, but he was better than Jason Kidd, and everybody knew he was a great X's and O's guy. They had Giannis before. They had Middleton before. They had Bledsoe before, but Jason Kidd didn't know what the hell he was doing. They got a good, smart, above-average basketball coach up there, and all of a sudden they're the best team in the damn NBA. But what do they have? A lot of talent and a top-five player. The Bulls have neither. So coaches just – it's a problem, and it's an embarrassment, which is maybe the biggest problem of the coaching, but it's not their biggest problem. Coach is far from the Bulls' biggest problem.
Agree. I agree. The guys he's coaching are a bigger problem.
Texter says, Mac asks the question, what's the point? Parkins' response, I don't know. This is the worst radio in Chicago. I'm telling you.
Oh, no, there's plenty worse.
There is worse.
Like that bad hotel in Phoenix. Harry says, go across. Let's go across the street. No, they're worse. They're even worse.
They're even worse. I'm just telling you, that's the state of the Bulls right now. You want to change coach? Okay, cool. I do, too. I think he's an embarrassment. Who are you getting? The reputation of how the Bulls handle coaches is worse than how they handle free agent players.
It is.
It's as bad as it gets.
Like, you keep Boylan next year. Just the fact that Boylan's here and this has gone on, and Paxson made it clear Bulls aren't going to be in on any of the big-time free agents, Durant, Kyrie, any of them. But even if you're a middle-tier guy and you have your pick of middle-tier teams to go to try to put into playoff level, or take a playoff team and make them, all right, there's a bench guy that can add depth and help them win a title. Like, the Bulls, you can sell money, and that's the only selling point you have, because it's, all right, well, yep, organization that just fired Fred Hoiberg and brought in Boylan and thought that Boylan was going to be an answer and created an incredible rift. Like, there's no way you can bring him back.
Okay, we'll see. If they get Zion Williamson and they've got Wendell Carter, maybe Chris Collins leaves Northwestern.
It takes many steps to repair a PR disaster, and the first of which would be getting rid of a guy who caused the players to consider filing a grievance his first weekend on the job.
And again, let me be abundantly clear. I'm totally fine if they get rid of Jim Boylan. This is not a defense of Jim Boylan. It is just merely an acknowledgement that without winning the lottery, they're not going to attract a marquee coach next offseason. It will not happen. They can get a first-time head coach. They can get a roll of the dice. Someone will always want the job of coaching the Chicago Bulls and getting a 4-year guaranteed contract. So they'll have people applying. But will it be a great coaching candidate? No, that will not happen.
I love this text. Guys, can you please keep the sports talk to 5 minutes?
That's amazing.
The anti-Jerry from Milwaukee.
We're going to talk about other topics limited to 5 minutes.
Hub Arkish at 5 o'clock. Something I've been waiting for literally years in the world of entertainment. We finally got some news on yesterday, and it's a big Chicago tie-in coming up on the Score.
I want to hear more sports.
Hub Arkish will join us in 10 minutes. I don't know how long you've been following this news, if at all, but I know you're a big movie buff, and we both love these two guys working together. But for years, it's been out there and reported that Martin Scorsese had optioned a screenplay for Devil in the White City.
Yep.
And that Leonardo DiCaprio was attached for the role of H.H. Holmes. And nothing then happened. For years.
Hey, what happened? Nothing.
And so I was like, oh, you know, Leo doesn't act that much. He's really picky with his projects. And so maybe this got put on the back burner or whatever. And then yesterday, just kind of
out of nowhere,
quietly and out of nowhere, it drops that it's not going to be a movie anymore. Scorsese and Leo are both executive producing. Still no word yet if Leo will act in the show. And it's going to be a television series on Hulu.
I am in. And I'll tell you, you know, it would be unfortunate if DiCaprio does not have on-camera presence. He and Scorsese together are fabulous, like peas and carrots. The H.H. Holmes story is one that I would venture to guess most don't know. This is a 19th century pathological serial killer in this city. And his plan, his meticulously executed plans, putting together odd buildings with trapdoors and torture rooms. He did it around the World's Fair in the late 1800s. I think it was 1893.
1893.
93 was the year. But he is, you know, we've heard a lot about Gacy. They made movies about people like Gacy or Speck. Or other serial killers. There has been very little said or written. Probably written more than said, but this is a movie that should have been made a long time ago. And I retweeted your tweet today about it and commented myself because I learned about the Holmes murders when I took an upper-level psych class in college on pathological behavior.
Oh, interesting.
Just for a hoot, just because, whatever blows your hair back, right?
Yeah.
I was interested, and I remember reading about him in the book Blood Letters and Bad Men, which was one of the most frightening books I ever read, and it was the first at that time I'd ever heard of H.H. Holmes.
I read Devil in the White City my first year out of college. I didn't really read anything that was assigned to me in really high school or college, but then when you're not working and you can read voluntarily, it's much more appealing than when it's assigned to you.
When you're not told to?
Yeah, exactly.
And hey, read this Chaucer. Now you go ahead. Stocked up on the Canterbury Tales.
There you go. It's like this is one of the great, books and stories ever, and it's about Chicago, and I was back living in the city, and I wasn't working. I was like, oh, I'll read this book. Flew through it, was blown away, couldn't believe how little I knew nothing of the story and the World's Fair. Millions of people came to a World Fair in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Millions of people.
To die.
Correct.
Many of them dead. Now, he was a whacked out former attorney, if I remember.
I believe.
It's been 30 plus years since I read the book, so I'm fuzzy on it.
Yeah, it's been, like I said, it's been a while for me too, and I was probably a little fuzzy when I was reading
but
it.
But he had to have money. He had all of the things you have to have. He had money. He had property. He had privacy. He had all of those things that are required to execute this devious plan, and I'm sure it's going to be very disturbing, and I'm a guy who likes that.
Sure.
I liked Silence of the Lambs. I like Manhunter, which was the prequel to it, that sort of thing, and just I look forward to it. I hope DiCaprio's got a role on camera, though.
That's the thing. What it would be amazing to me if Leonardo DiCaprio, this is the thing that gets him to make the jump to television. Because he's been, yeah. This golden age of TV, those few movie stars, most of them, like the biggest, the A-list people, haven't made the jump to TV, right? You don't see Denzel doing TV. But it just happened on Amazon. Julia Roberts has a show.
Yep, she does.
On Amazon, and she gets paid a ton of money per episode, and it's critically acclaimed. And so how cool would it be if Leo, he might be a little old for the role, but, I can do crazy makeup, right?
Yeah. Holmes was a doctor. Thank you. Texters, how old was he?
I feel like some of the feedback in the comments that I was reading said that DiCaprio might be old to play Holmes now, he was the actor. And I was like, I don't know. And like I said, it's been rumored for forever, but they can do amazing things. I just saw Christian Bale turn into Dick Cheney. So yeah. I would think that they can, make Leonardo DiCaprio a little younger.
Bale is rising rapidly on my list of favorite actors who are working
too.
A lot. He ought to be.
Yeah, and people saying Leo was on Growing Pains. I understand that. I'm talking about since he's become a movie star, going back to TV. Yes, George Clooney, broke out in ER, but he's a movie star. George Clooney's not doing TV now. But a lot of big-time actors have gone to TV because that's where more of the quality of the work is and they can do longer-form things. So if Leonardo DiCaprio, probably the most recognizable actor going right now, went to TV with Martin Scorsese, and it was a Chicago story off one of the great books ever, Devil in the White City.
George Clooney.
I am in, is all I'm saying. I am in.
Yeah, H.H. Holmes, a guy who more should have been written about him. The story is so disturbing, but there are other disturbing stories that were written about and had movies made after him, after them. I mean, God.
Mac, what was your favorite part of the World's Columbian Exposition here in Chicago?
The Ferris wheel.
When Pabst Blue Ribbon was just a ribbon, but received first place honor, and that ribbon became blue. Why am I talking like Steve McMichael? I have no idea.
It worked. Hub Arkish on the Browns signing Kareem Hunt. Who's going to be in?
I have a feeling we'll differ on some of this chatter.
Who's going to be in on Antonio Brown, who said goodbye to the Steelers? Will the Cardinals trade Josh Rosen for the rights to draft Kyler Murray?
Yeah, and I want to ask Hub how many times he's rewatched that spectacular 53rd version of the Super Bowl, because he loved the game.
I know. I know he did.
He knows his football.
Hub Arkish next on The Score.